Workforce Development, if you've seen the agenda, page in front and back, we've got a lot. And we're going to try to get to everybody's bill.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think the words for today are, do you want to talk or do you want a bill?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it is today.
Okay, good.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's open up possible reconsideration and work session on House Bill 2548A. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the 523 vote on House Bill 2548.
Senator Starr has moved the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the 523 vote by which we passed out House Bill 2548. Should the motion, Senator?
Well, this bill dealt with vertical conveyance lifts, and soon after the meeting there was agreement on an amendment that would exempt the installers of home incline lifts from licensing.
Okay, is there any objection for reconsideration? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, having voted on the prevailing side, I move to reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 2548.
Okay. Having voted on the prevailing side, Senator Starr moves to reconsider the vote by which we passed out House Bill 2548. Any objection? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move, since we have the bill in front of us now, I move the adoption of the dash A5 amendments. They are in addition to the A3 amendment that we adopted in 523.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved the dash A5 amendment to House Bill 2548 in addition to the dash 3 we've already put into the bill. This is the amendment we discussed earlier when there was some question about these ramps, and I learned when we have witnessed, finally did come to committee, that their concerns were on elevators, not on this ramp. And so I think this is a good catch by Senator Starr. Do you have a comment, Janet?
No, Mr. Chair, I was just going to explain the A3.
Okay, please do then.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill, the A5 amendments would exempt the installation and repair of the mechanical portions of a residential wheelchair incline lift from both electrical and elevator licensing requirements.
Okay. Any questions? Any objections to the motion? It's ordered. Senator Starr.
Chair, I move House Bill 2548 as amended by both the A3s and the A5s to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2548 as amended by the dash 3 and dash 5 amendments to the House to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? It's ordered. Senator Starr, since you worked so hard on that, would you please carry that bill?
Certainly.
Okay, let's open up a session on House Bill 2435, Vehicle Appraisers. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we just got an amendment right before the meeting. I'm going to pass it out.
Warm amendments.
Excuse me. They are, this is the bill that would establish a requirement that a person that appraises a vehicle has to have an appraiser's certificate issued by the Department of Transportation. The A3 amendments delete the additional master appraiser category that was in the original bill, and it clarifies exemptions from the appraiser certification requirements, including vehicle dealers and insurance adjusters and persons who appraise real estate and appraise the value of a manufactured structure. It defines appraiser, which the original bill did not have this clear definition, and clarifies that appraisers who do not receive compensation are not required to be certified.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we're in work session.
Yes.
Move the dash A3 amendment to House Bill 2435.
Senator Starr has moved the dash A3 amendment to House Bill 2435. Discussion, Senator George, you're the one that brought some of these good points up. Does this meet with your satisfaction?
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Do we just
have a motion on the floor, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, we haven't put the A3, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Okay, any objections to the motion to adopt the A3? Okay, so ordered. Senator Starr.
Move the bill as amended with the A3 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2435 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Master.
Objection? So ordered. Senator George, would you carry that one?
Will do.
Thank you very much. Okay. Open up a work session on House Bill 2537. Janet.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2537 is the bill that you heard last week that would prohibit employees of mass transit districts, transportation districts, and municipal bus systems from striking or recognizing picket lines of a labor organization. There is an emergency clause on the bill. You have at your place the A4 amendments for consideration. and those amendments would limit the prohibition on striking to the employees of mass transit districts, which would include TriMet Lane Transit and Salem Area Mass Transit, but would not prohibit striking by the smaller transportation districts.
Okay. I haven't sensed a great deal of enthusiasm for the amendment, so we're in work session. And
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm going to move the bill to the Senate floor with a due-pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2537 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
The amendments were brought to my attention, but they were brought to my attention, I believed that the impression that I was given was that these were consensus amendments that had been kind of worked by the proponents and opponents kind of together on the bill. That turned out not to be the case. I'm comfortable with the bill, the original bill. So.
Thank you, Senator. Any other discussion? Any objection to the motion? So ordered. I will carry the bill. Yes, just show Senator Deckard as excused until he shows up. Then there will be no excuse. Okay, open up a work session on House Bill 2654. Janet.
Chair, this is the biggest bill today. It's a bill that is the Construction Claims Task Force package of bills, and you now have the dash A4 amendments. You had the dash A3 amendments last week. There are very few changes. I marked the changes in your bill. Again, this bill can contain enforcement provisions, standard notice and contract requirements, and Construction Contractor Board continuing education requirements. The changes are very slight. They're on page 3, page 4, page 5, and 18 and 26 from the dash 3 amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the dash A4 amendments to House Bill 2654.
Senator Starr has moved the dash A4 amendment to House Bill 2654.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Under discussion. It's my understanding that Mr. Long and I believe Mr. Smith worked with some of the interests on this bill to bring the A4s. My understanding is these are kind of the consensus amendments to address some of the minor concerns that were raised when we had the public testimony on the bill.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator. Sure. Senator George.
The only thing is that I was hoping in the amendments that we would have a review process, temporary rules, have them bring those back to us for our review next time to make sure we're okay with the continuing education. After discussions with the agency and due to the time we're left in the session, I'm fine with moving the bill and trust the agency will be prudent with their authority.
Well, thank you, Senator. And again, one of the advantages of coming back in February, we'll ask the board to come before us in February to go over the rules and how they're being applied. And if we have any issues about them, we'll have the ability to make modifications. So, yes, Jen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out that fiscal did do a very fast turnaround fiscal impact for the A3 amendments, which are, again, similar to the A4s. And the because the most of this package is in Ways and Means in the House, we thought would be of interest to you. And for most of the provisions, she did a table that shows where the costs would be. And for most of the provisions, it's the staff at the CCB will be able to take care of it. But they want to raise the concern about cumulative effects of different bills passing.
Sure. They do add up. Okay, any other discussion? Any objection to, I'm running behind here.
We're on the amendment.
We are on the amendment. Any objection to the A4 amendment? Okay, so ordered. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended by the A4s to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2654 as amended by the A4 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Just I want to put on the record, I appreciate Mr. Long and Mr. Smith working with the interests on this bill and bringing us an amendment that I think makes folks, even though they're minor tweaks, more comfortable with the bill.
Yes, very good point, and I do appreciate that, too. You know, we had a lot of discussion on this 2 years ago on the issues, and people worked very, very hard over the interim to bring this to us. I know there's still a few pieces down in Ways and Means, but this should give us some consolation that most of it will for sure get through, and hopefully the rest of it as well. Any objections to the motion? Not so ordered. And Mark Senator Deckard is excused, and I'll carry that one. Okay. Let's put up a work session on House Bill 3485. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that was also heard last week. that creates the affordable housing covenants that are able to restrict the price, rental rate, or occupancy. The covenants are, again, entered into on a voluntary basis by a property owner in exchange for benefits of a subsidy. You have the dash two A2 amendments, and they are two corrections to the bill. The A3 amendments that are Senator George's concept, if the holder of a housing covenant is a corporation and the corporation is dissolved without conveying or assigning the covenant, the affordable housing covenant would automatically terminate. And that's, again, Senator George's concept. And just before the meeting, we received the A4 amendments, and these are from Representative Dingfelder. I'm going to pass them out, and they are in the back of the room. And Representative Dingfelder's amendments have a different approach to the termination of a not just dissolving of a holder of a corporation, but the termination of an affordable housing covenant. And Tad Everhart is here that spoke to you on the original bill and concept, and if you have any questions for him.
Okay, so we have the option of the two threes or fours.
The dash A2s need to be adopted. They're corrections.
Oh, those are, yeah, okay, that's a technical amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Starr.
Move the A2 amendment to House Bill 3485.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the A2 amendment to House Bill 3485. Any objection? Not so ordered. I think before we do the next move, I appreciate the work on this, both the A4 and the A3. We did hear testimony that this is like probably never going to happen. But Senator George brought up a very good point. What if it happened? And the last thing you want to do is be able to have someone not be able to clear title. So I am very comfortable with Senator George's amendment, the A3, since we've been told that we will never see this in our lifetime anyway. But I think it makes it very, very clear and doesn't get too complicated. So I would ask that we have a motion for the A3.
Mr. Chairman, the A3 amendment to House Bill 3485.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved the A3 amendment to House Bill 3485. Discussion.
Chair.
Senator George.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Any other discussion? Ms. Janet.
Chair, there is not a mechanism in the A3 amendments for actually getting the title, the change to the title. That would be something that would be worked out in the event that it happens.
Okay.
And there's not a mechanism in the amendments.
Right. All right. Any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, I move the bill as amended with the A2s and A3s to the Senate floor for the House recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 3485 as amended by the A2s and 3s to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator.
I know we jumped past the A4s, and no one has really talked to me about the A4s from Representative Dingfelder. It's nice to know what they do.
Well, it's another approach to dealing with the termination of when the covenant terminates.
Very similar.
And they have different impacts. The issue that was brought up by Senator George was primarily, what if these covenant holders just didn't exist? How do they clear title? I think that was the real issue, as opposed to anything else. I think I don't see anything particularly wrong with the A4. I just think that the A3 is simpler. And again, we're dealing with something that we've been told will just doesn't happen. So it's a pretty far reach, but I do think it's just a safety valve.
No one's here to advocate for it either.
Well, if somebody wants to talk about the A4, fine, but I'm moving the bill, so.
I have a motion on the floor to move the bill with the A3s.
Okay. You want to object to that, Senator Montes?
No,
that's okay.
That's all
right. Okay. All right. So ordered.
I really feel strongly those A4s are great amendments, Mr. Chair.
Senator Deckard has come to the room. That was the bill, wasn't it?
Yes, we moved
the bill. Okay. All right. For that, I'm going to have Senator Deckard carry the bill. Okay. Now, where are we? Okay. Members, House Bill 2170 is the next one on our docket, and we have received quite a number of amendments on this bill. This is the bill for temporary licensing by the OLCC. There are issues from people from neighborhood associations in the city of Portland on this. I know you've all been talked to about it, and frankly, the chair just doesn't feel real comfortable with any of the amendments doing what the OLCC feels they need to do. And at the same standpoint, I'm not particularly comfortable in moving it without some amendment based on some of the testimony we heard. So we're not going to do the bill. We're going to keep things the way they are, and maybe the OLCC can come back with another approach next session on that. So just to let you know, if you're here for that one, we're keeping the status quo. Okay. Let's open up a work session on House Bill 2487. Janet.
Chair, House Bill 2487 was heard in the middle of May. It was at the request of the Oregon Wine Growers. It allows wine or cider from a licensed warehouse to be shipped to a retail licensee if the shipment is made pursuant to sale by the holder of a grower license or a malt beverage wholesale license. There are two amendments that you had at that time at the hearing, and they make specifications about direct shipment of wine or cider from the warehouse, similar to provisions that are required of direct shipment by the winery itself. There was no opposing testimony on the bill or the two amendments.
Okay.
Starting with the twos?
Yeah, let's do the twos.
Move the two amendments to House Bill 2487.
Senator Starr has moved the two amendments to House Bill 2487. Discussion on the amendment. Okay, any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, move the bill as amended to Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2487 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the bill. Any concerns?
I'm trying to catch up. The twos.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Janet.
And Senator Deckard?
Labeling.
The twos require that when the shipment is made from the warehouse directly to a person, that certain things are contained on the container, conspicuous label on the container. The carrier has to obtain the signature of the recipient. The carrier has to verify the recipient's age, and the carrier has to determine that the recipient is not visibly intoxicated. And these are exactly the same provisions that are required when the winery itself makes a direct shipment.
Terrific. Okay. Any other questions? Any concerns? Okay. Is there any objection then? So order. Okay.
Okay.
Senator Starr will carry that bill. 47.
Smokers.
Oh, yeah. Open up for session on 2498A. Janet.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2498, and we started with the A and gross bill and heard this bill last week. This extends a current exemption for an owner of a home to be able to work on the home if they live in it without a contractor's license if they hire contractors. The bill would extend that to anyone who purchases a home. They don't have to live in it, and up to four homes they would be able to work on it without it having a general contractor's license if they hired contractors to do the actual work. We have the A4 amendment that would clarify that the exemption does not apply to the construction of new homes, but again, just remodeling of homes. The A5 amendments would limit the number of existing houses that could be, the term is flipped under the measure to three homes instead of four in the original bill, and the A6 amendments limit it to two homes.
Okay. I'm going to ask Mr. Levy to come forward. First person we're asking up here briefly. For your comment specifically on the A5s and A6s, you know, as you know, Mr., there was some concern about some of the on this bill, as well as some recognition of the fact that this is happening and some of the changes you made in the House. Wanted to know your perspective on changing the bill if we were to move forward to two or three, and what your perspective would be on that.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. For the record, I am Harlan Levy here representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. As between the A5s and the A6s, we would prefer the A5 amendments that go from four to three. Is that the only question you had, Senator?
Mm-hmm. Came ahead. Anybody else have a question for Mr. Levy while he's up here? Okay. I would like to have a motion for the A5, if that's possible.
Mr. Chair, I move the A5 amendments.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved the A5 amendment to House Bill 2498. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I'd be happy with the bill as it stood, but I'll support the chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other discussion?
I prefer the A6s.
Okay. Any other discussion?
I like the A2s.
We're going to do this together.
Any objection besides Senator Mona Sanderson? I'm just assuming his objection to that. Okay. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I think we need to do the A4s
yes.
as well.
The
A4s.
No.
Mr. Chair, the A6s incorporate the existing.
Okay.
That take away.
No, but isn't there another one, or is that it? Besides the A5, is that it? Is that all we need?
And Mr. Chair, the A5 includes the A4s.
Okay. Gotcha. So we're okay. We're good to go. Okay. Any objection to House Bill 24?
Wait a minute. We moved the A5, correct?
Yes.
And?
The term existing on line 2 of the A5s is...
Existing, so that's the key. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any objection to moving House Bill 2498 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Any objection? Okay, so ordered.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Starr will carry it. It's going to get fun soon. Okay, let's see. Flip it over here. Okay, let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 2864, Cemetery Authorities. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2864 is an update and clarification of statutes that are related to cemetery authorities, pre-arrangement sale contracts, and to sales contracts. The witness sheet. And it would authorize DCBS to issue emergency orders, to suspend or restrict certain certificates. It would authorize the director to appoint successor providers for a cemetery or funeral home under conditions that involve harm to consumers. It provides authority to sell pre-arrangement contracts and provides that they're not transferable so that the transferee must requalify as a provider. It allows the department to give endowment care cemeteries time to correct their processes instead of having an immediate sanction for them handling trust funds and reporting on those trust fund accounts. And it allows the attorney general to petition for an appointment of a receiver for certain providers. It also clarifies who may consent to the disinterment of remains, and there's some obsolete provisions that are taken out of the statutes. There's additional technical corrections, but those were kind of the substantive ones. Again, it's brought by the Oregon Cemetery Association and came to you on a 57-0 vote from the House. You should have the A and Gross bill.
Okay, thank you. Ty Cochran and David Tatman, please.
My name is Ty Cochran, a legislative liaison for the Cemetery Association of Oregon. And about 18 months ago, a task force was put together to revisit ORS 97. And we brought together Funeral Directors Association, of course, the DCBS, the Bankers Association, Attorney General's Office, every player that could ever be involved with this revision of 97. And we've all came to a consensus of course, what you have there in front of you. And Mr. Tatman graciously came in the last couple months and helped us with some of the more critical issues that we couldn't come to a consensus with, and I'd prefer to have him speak about those.
Okay, Tatman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is David Tapman. I'm the administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities within the Department of Consumer and Business Services. This is one of the many programs that the division has regulatory oversight over, and Mr. Cochran's absolutely correct. This is something that we had on our interim agenda to try and address, update the laws here. And in the course of time, a couple of specific issues came up that we thought it was worth trying to bring to this committee or bring to the legislature. I've handed out testimony. Gives you some background on our focus in this area. We are not the mortuary board. We do not regulate cemeteries per se or funeral homes. However, we do have a responsibility for situations where money is entrusted, and that comes up often in an area called pre-need trusts, and that is simply when people buy funeral services or cemetery-related items, headstones, caskets, vaults, and so forth, in advance. You know, we encourage people to plan, just like we encourage people to have insurance. So we think this is a good thing to do. But when that money is held in trust, we think that there are certain requirements that anybody serving as a trustee would need to meet. That's a long way of just giving you some background. And so as a part of this group, there were several areas where we saw there were problems. For instance, the director didn't have authority to adopt rules in this area. We think that's a fairly fundamental concern. So that's one of the amendments to the law that you'll see in there. In addition, there were concerns about our ability to step in if there were problems. Particularly, we didn't have the ability to appoint a receiver, and we had problems come up. We had a large problem down in the Eugene area, in which a certified provider slash cemetery was accused of mishandling funds. The people left the area. The funds couldn't be accounted for. We wanted a receiver appointed. We didn't have that authority, so we're asking for that authority now. That's obviously a last-ditch effort, if you will. It's the last thing we would turn to. We would try and work with people. But if necessary, receivership should be there to protect the consumers and make sure the funds are accounted for and obtained, if necessary, from the former certified provider. A couple other issues I just want to bring to the committee's attention. One had to do with the refunding. One of the things we like about this program is if somebody purchases a pre-need trust, they have the ability to cancel it at any time and get all their money back that they've paid into that. Many people pay 100%, but some obviously can't. And so we want them to be able to get that money they've paid back plus any interest allocated. So you'll see language in the bill that adds that provision to clarify what the standards are that we want the certified providers to hold themselves to. And I think that helps provide some clarity. The last issue is one that has been fairly has been in the news to some degree, and that has to do with the conversion of trusted monies into insurance contracts. And we attempted to try and address this originally in the bill. Through our encouragement, all the parties to this bill agreed that we should pull that for now and revisit that later. So with respect to the matters within the bill that are coming under our jurisdiction, we think this is a fine approach to those matters. There are other matters that we don't address because it has to do with cemeteries and funeral directors. I understand from the parties involved they're comfortable with that. So as I say, we're neutral as to the bill itself, but we support those areas that fall under our jurisdiction.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Strong?
Let's move it.
Yeah, questions? Any questions? Janet?
I was just going to point out that David Coe from the Mortuary and Cemetery Board is here if you have any questions
okay.
for him also.
Does anybody have any questions? Okay. Thank you. Close public hearing, open a work session, House Bill 2864.
Mr. Chairman, the bill is sent forward with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2864 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Montes Anderson, you know, cemeteries, there's a lot of them in the Gresham area. I think maybe
I'd love to.
That would be a good one for you. Deckard's excuse, I don't know where he went. Okay. And we don't have Representative Shields is not here. Let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 2171. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2171 is at the request of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. It would allow a person to sell and ship wine or cider directly to an Oregon resident, either an in-state winery or an out-of-state winery, if they possess a direct shipper permit issued by the OLCC. There's fees for these permits and limited as to who can obtain them. This is in response to a U.S. Supreme Court decision that a state can't enact laws blocking out-of-state wineries from shipping directly to customers, but this would require them to obtain a permit and for Oregon wineries to obtain a permit as well. There is a fiscal impact statement on the A. and Gross bill, and there is a -82 amendment authorizing counties by a vote of their boards to impose taxes on the retail sale of beer or wine. Specifies that revenues from such a tax be used for only for public health and safety operations in the county.
Okay, thank you. Let's ask Mr. Conklin, Ms. Squires, and let's see, who else is the underlying bill supporters? Judith? Is it Brankovich? Brankovich. Okay. Thank you. And we'll start off by addressing the underlying bill, and then we'll ask for your comments on the -2 after we've had that discussion of the underlying bill.
Good. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I apologize that I was out in the hallway, but I have a bill in the next committee that I'm watching.
You're a busy man.
For the record, my name is Gary Conkling. I represent the Oregon Wine Growers Association, and we support House Bill 2171. The direct shipment of wine to consumers is a critical distribution channel for Oregon's more than 300 small wineries and vineyard operators who sell under their own label. Direct shipment enables wineries to cultivate and satisfy sophisticated wine consumers in Oregon and around the country who wouldn't otherwise be able to obtain wines produced in relatively small volumes. A recent U.S. Supreme Court decision has raised questions about the privileges of in-state and out-state wineries. This is the Granholm decision. House Bill 2171 and another bill that you will hear later on today, House Bill 2677, are both responses to the Supreme Court decision that requires us to modify the basis for legal authorities of existing privileges that wineries have, but in our case to make sure that we preserve those privileges and don't really have a legal challenge. So what House Bill 2171 does with respect to direct shipment is to follow the path already walked by California and Washington to switch from our current reciprocal state arrangement, which the Supreme Court in this Granholm decision indicated is probably unconstitutional because it's too restrictive, that we will switch to a direct wine shipment permit system. Under this system, both in-state and out-state, out-of-state wineries would obtain a wine direct shipment permit from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Retailers and vineyard operators who sell wine under their own label also would be able to obtain a direct shipment permit. And all of these groups today have the privilege under our existing authority to ship directly to consumers. This would continue their ability to do it, but under a new system. There is one extension of authority under House Bill 2171, which is to allow trade associations composed primarily of Oregon wineries and vineyard operators that hold a temporary sales license to have the direct shipment privilege, but only during the time in which that temporary sales license is in effect. I would just note in conclusion, Mr. Chair, that without passage of House Bill 2171, legal action could be undertaken that challenges Oregon legal authority to continue direct shipment of wine under our existing arrangement. The loss of direct shipment privileges would be a huge financial blow to Oregon's small wineries. So we very much urge the passage of House Bill 2171.
Thank you, Mr. Conkling. Judith.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Judith Personovich, representing the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I don't really need to add comments to the underlying bill at this point in time. The wine growers, OLCC, and others work together on the bill at A. and Gross.
Okay. Questions from the committee on the underlying bill before us? Okay. Mr. Conklin, you want to address the A2 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My colleague from the OLCC indicated, we had a significant effort to work out the specific language in House Bill 2171, which preserves the agency's ability to oversee and control this particular approach. It's a bill that has its own fragility. Whenever you're dealing with direct shipment, there are some people that have concerns about that. So I would not be comfortable with the Dash 2 amendment because I think that it upsets that balance. As to the policy of local option selective retail sales taxes, I also think there's some question in terms of the policy wisdom of such sales taxes. But our primary concern is that I think that it jeopardizes this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Conklin. We'll dismiss this panel. And what I'm going to do, temporarily close the public hearing on House Bill 2171, because Representative Shields has arrived, and I know how busy everyone is, so I want to be respectful of that. We'll come back to it. Oh. Well, okay. Let's see. Which one is Shields? Oh, let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 2726, Janet.
House Bill 2726, Mr. Chair and members, would declare an official state policy that state-funded research that benefits private enterprise must encourage economic development and job creation in Oregon. You should have the A in gross bill.
The Ingalls bill, shortest bill in this legislature, one sentence. Welcome, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Chip Shields, State Representative, District 43, North and Northeast Portland. Mr. Chair, over the next 10 years or so, Oregon will be doing a lot of very good research that will benefit private enterprise, some of which, or most of which, I'm very, very supportive of, like Manufacturing 21 Coalition. And when I was at a Portland Development Commission hearing on the Manufacturing 21 Coalition's work, a human resources person from a small manufacturer in my district said, you know, this sounds good, but shouldn't we try to ensure that this type of taxpayer-funded research improves manufacturing processes here in Oregon as opposed to, say, improving them in China or in some other country, and rather than encouraging outsourcing, that it would encourage job creation in Oregon. And that's the intention of this bill. So I put together the original House Bill 2726 with that framework, and that the notion was that OUS and economic development and workforce and community colleges, when they were going to contract out research dollars, would require that that be part of the RFP process. Several of those agencies had some concerns about that, and particularly if the funding was not particularly related to economic development or jobs. So Lisa Savella is here from OUS to talk about the compromise, and essentially the compromise that we came to is just take out that second part about the RFP process to make a more bland statement about what state policy should be.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Lisa Zavala with the Oregon University System. As Representative Shields has indicated, we did have some concerns with the original bill and how it would impact our overall research mission at the university system. And we worked with the representative and got the language down to, I believe, capture the intent, and that is that research that is state-funded or funded with general fund dollars would have as one of its primary goals job creation and economic development, which we strive to at least achieve to as a byproduct of the research that we do. But much of our research at the university level is done for student engagement and student learning, and we did have some concerns that we would be violating the law if we weren't able to ensure that research funded by state appropriation would result in jobs. So I'm very pleased. We're happy and content, and can support the Ingalls bill.
Okay, thank you. Questions for either of our guests?
Senator Deckard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question's, I think, directed at Ms. Savala. So the research that I'm obviously most familiar with is the Oregon-y package, but it is far more encompassing federal and state. And I would just want to be sure, I think, as Representative Shields said, that this makes me a little bit nervous of putting anything, because I would hate for something to happen on a campus where folks are not enthusiastic about a particular research project. Perhaps it's a federal grant with some state dollars to a university professor to do it, and I wouldn't want them to be able to use this language to wholly shut down that research, and just would want to be sure that us approving this language wouldn't allow that to occur.
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckard, I agree and I share the concern, and the system does, as well as the research universities do share that concern. I think that the language in the bill on line 5 that says encourages economic development, we are hopeful that most of the research that's done through Oregon, the ONAMI project, if you will, and has that as one of its major focuses is economic development. I'm certain that we will continue to watch our grants and the state-funded research that we do conduct on our campuses. And if we do run into a problem, I believe we'll be back to visit with you all about that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Miles Anderson.
Having done research, actually, at University of Colorado and University of Arizona, what about research in child behavior, research in prevention programs like smoking cessation, et cetera? That's not encouraging economic development or job creation. And so I actually can think of a lot of research that would not be economic development or job creation, yet it is to the benefit of the society.
Mr. Chair, Senator Moniz Anderson, I think the key word is there that benefits private enterprise, and I think that I'll let Ms. Avella talk about how this language was proposed by the University of Oregon to get around
that. You've clarified it. I just misread it.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair. So to represent Shield, I'm just scanning quickly all the research that I know of. Is there particular research that we're doing that is a concern that this would be helpful with? And obviously, I've been focused on some of the innovation research.
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckard, I think it's more moving forward because we're going to be doing so much more of this that we wanted to set state policy to provide some guidelines for that research moving forward.
Thank you. We've had a lot of research and some significant success at OHSU particularly in coming up with life-saving new drugs and combination of drugs. My understanding is that we don't have a strong pharmaceutical industry in Oregon. I don't know this for a fact, but my guess would be that research, those new discoveries, are going to be marketed by a company that's not located in the state of Oregon, potentially will build jobs and create economic opportunity for private enterprise in some drug company, pharmaceutical company that's not located in Oregon, maybe not even located in the United States. My concern is, does this bill in some way put a hamper on or dampen that really cutting-edge research that's going on at OHSU specifically?
I think I'll let Ms. Savella answer that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I cannot speak for OHSU and for the research that's done in the pharmaceutical areas or even in the biomedical areas, but we, as in supporting of Senator Moniz Anderson's questions, we did have some concerns about some of the peripheral type of research. Let me put it this way. The state-supported research projects that are conducted, and we still retain our original concern as to whether or not this will at least hamper some of the research that might be done in the future at our research institutions, inclusive of OHSU, that might not necessarily be interpreted as benefiting private industry if it does benefit society at large. Again, we're hopeful that our researchers and our grant writers can work those issues out on an case-by-case basis and make sure that we're not violating the intent. We did need to remove the language in the original bill that required us to insure it, because that was a pretty much of a guarantee in which we could not guarantee, as we work with subgrantees and subcontractors, and it just kind of filters down. So we were able to get that out. We do understand, and the intention of the bill is that we need to improve our economic development in Oregon and increase it and enhance it in any way that we can. But we do need to be mindful of maybe some unintended consequences, and we'll be working carefully with our researchers.
Mr. Chair, further question?
Senator Scar.
Was there any discussion, or has there been any discussion about what state-funded means? Does state-funded mean that, you know, any public university is state-funded? Any public university is subsidized by general fund? I mean, we are funding all of the state universities. Does the word state-funded basically mean any public university in Oregon, any research that's done in any public university in Oregon? Or does that state-funded mean state funding that is specifically directed to specific research? I think that needs to be
clarified.
If it means any public research or any research that's done in any public university, I have to be a no on this.
Professor's salary.
Yeah, I mean,
I can appreciate that, Senator Metzger, Senator Starr. In the work group, there was discussion about that, and the sitting around the table with the OUS president and others, we determined that what this means is general fund dollars going for specific research, not indirect public support.
Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm thinking medical technology and development of prosthesis, and they're always trying to, and I think that's private companies, and they're always trying to develop better prosthesis, and it's not economic development, it's making the quality of life of a person better.
Senator Chair, Senator Montes-Anderson, if I could kind of take a step back. I think if you look at this, there are probably several scenarios where you could think of where if a person looked at it in a particular way, you might have some problems with this bill. I think what we'll end up doing is getting on the record the intent, both in the floor speeches as well as here in committee. And I think it's also important to realize that with the amendments that were agreed upon by the entire university system and proposed by the University of Oregon, that there really is no enforcement mechanism left in the bill. It's really just a policy suggestion. And I think at the end of the day, hopefully, what will happen is that when people are doing research, they'll be thinking, okay, I need to make sure that at least one of the benefits of this is that it creates jobs in Oregon as opposed to other places. That's the intention.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. I know you're very busy, so we'll let you go. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2726. We have Representative Hunt here, so let me open up a public hearing on House Bill 3082. Janet.
Mr. Chair and members, House Bill 3082 would remove a requirement in existing law that an ordinance establishing a county vehicle registration fee be approved by electors of the county. Mr. Chair, this is... we did include the vote from the House, and Representative Hunt is the sponsor.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Hunt, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill, unlike the last one, really leaves no room for interpretation or misinterpretation. It's very clear. It removes one sentence out of state statute, but I think it's a very critical sentence that empowers, allows counties, does not require, but allows counties, gives them one tool to begin to address some of their local transportation needs. We are all well, and the members of this committee are as well aware as anybody in the building of the huge transportation needs facing our state and facing local communities. Unfortunately, the chances of a really adequate solution this session are very slim. Fortunately, especially because of the good work of Senator Metzger and Senator Starr, we've got a very good chance at passing something, but we've really got to do more than that, especially with the serious maintenance backlogs, the serious modernization needs, And then you add on top of that all the additional impacts that these timber-dependent counties are facing because of the loss of revenue either immediately or sometime in the near term. This is one tool that gives local counties an option to get resources from within their county and be able to reinvest those in their county roads. I would commend it to you and be happy to take any questions you have.
Thank you, Representative. Questions for Representative Hunt? Okay, thank you very much. So we'll get back to the bill later. So again, let's Representative Hunt move on. Let's see. Let's go back to the public hearing on House Bill 2171. Get my sheet up again. We heard from Mr. Conkling and OLCC. I'm going to find what it is, my sheet. Well, I know we had Kurt, I know, was here, was signed up, so why don't you come up as I find my sheet. Welcome.
Chairman Metzger, members of the committee, my name is Kurt Widmer. I'm co-founder of Widmer Brothers Brewing in Portland, Oregon. If 23 years ago, a group had approached the Oregon policymakers promising a new industry that would create 4,000 direct jobs and 10,000 indirect jobs in the state of Oregon, and if this group promised as an industry to give back to the community, be a good corporate citizen, be environmentally conscious, we recycle 97% of our solid waste as an industry, provide a uniquely Oregon attraction for visitors, and if this industry would pay all taxes that every other business pays in Oregon, plus excise tax, what would the response of the policymakers have been at that time? Oregon has become a wonderful anomaly. Craft beer sales in Oregon are four times the national average. There are more craft brewers in every part of the state than any other state on a per capita basis. For our history, our brief 23-year history, we've had a series of nurturing legislatures, and that has resulted in the creation of a vibrant and dynamic industry that not only pays its fair share of taxes, but continues to create manufacturing jobs. And this at a time when Oregon is, according to, I'll cite the Oregonian here, March 30th, since August of last year, the state has shed nearly 8,000 jobs, manufacturing jobs, which is three times the national average. Not too far away from my brewery, Freightliner recently announced a layoff of 1,500 employees, and we're in situated in North Portland, and so for those of you that are not familiar with Portland, that's not a part of Portland that has an excess of jobs. Just for the record, Mr. Chair and committee members, I am not opposed to the House Bill 2171. I am opposed to the proposed amendments.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Widmer. On your opposition, I went through. We've heard these issues, as you know, and you've testified to, and we appreciate the great business that you have brought to the state. But as I was going through, actually voluminous testimony on this issue over the last number of years, one of the things that kept coming up and up, and from a number of people here in this room, was that their concern was primarily in your industry, in your folks, was on privilege taxes because it cost you jobs, because you couldn't compete, because folks like Coors and Budweiser, the testimony that we have in our file here is that, you know, they take these taxes and they amortize them over the whole country, not competitive. And on, I got eight specific quotations saying, but if you had a sales tax, we're all even. That's not a privilege tax. That doesn't work. That's fine. And what this would do is allow counties to have a sales tax. So it's not a production tax. It doesn't hit you at all. Everybody pays whether it's a nickel or a dime at the point of retail. So I want to understand why all that testimony now changes, or am I missing something here that different from the previous testimony when we've talked about altering the privilege tax?
Chair Metzger, I don't think that our position has changed. If there were a general sales tax, I won't speak on behalf of all the craft brewers in Oregon, but for my company, I think we would support a general sales tax. my opposition, our opposition, is a tax that singles out our particular industry. So I think that's the distinction. So I don't think we've been inconsistent. We would continue to support a general sales tax in the state of Oregon.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Widmer?
Thank you, sir,
very much. Okay, let's go to Bill Perry. I have Chris Gerard and Brian. I can't quite pronounce the last name, so I won't try. There you go. Thank you, sir.
Go first, or you want me to?
Doesn't matter.
Why don't you go first, Molly?
Good afternoon, Welcome. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Chris Gerard. I'm president of Plant Pantries, Inc., and I'm also a director of the Oregon Neighborhood Store Association, also known as ONSA, which represents the interests of about 3,000 mostly small, independent, family-owned stores other than Plant Pantry. I got a call last night saying I may be needed for HB 2171, and I said, why? That was never on my radar screen. And then I learned about the amendment. I really have more questions than points because I just found out about it. But my main question is I don't understand how something can go quite this far without getting input and analyzing the impact on small business and the change. It's a sweeping change in the competitive real estate leasing market with 36 counties having taxing authority that there's going to be differential in taxes. It's going to adversely impact a store owner that happens to be on one side of a county line versus the other. And I don't believe that that these considerations have been thought about. There's also a question about taxation. Will the wholesale tax continue while this local county sales tax is collected as well? And I'm told that there may be a statutory problem with that, in that malt beverages and wine are subject to tax only once. So is the state tax going to go away and state revenues will go down in lieu of the county accepting these taxes? A equally large change is it changes the entire operating and accounting system of not just Plant Pantry, but a small store when they become the tax collector for a new tax. What is the infrastructure and the procedures that are set up? Had the counties requested taxing authority on malt beverages? And if so, what is the projected need and use of the revenue? And I see that the amendment says only for the purpose of funding public health and safety, but if I was a county commissioner, I would fund as much as I could with as much beer tax as I could raise in my county, and you could divert funds that were previously used for that. So there's no cap on this. In general, when we have county tax rates, there is some kind of statutory limit on it. This appears to me, with no offense to any county commissioners that might be here, carte blanche to tax whatever they want on beer. The balance between beer and distilled spirits, malt beverages in Oregon are declining steadily, and distilled spirits, to the good luck of the state of Oregon, are increasing dramatically.
I'm sorry, are you aware of the tax on distilled spirits?
Yes, I am.
It's 100%. It's 100%.
Yes, but right now I'm talking about supply and demand of where consumers are going. Right now, tax included in cost to the consumer, distilled spirits are still cheaper per ounce of active ingredient ethanol than beer.
All right. So our next witness. I'm trying to get everybody on. And as you say, we have a whole bunch of bills. So let me go on to the next witness. Sir.
Okay. Can I just one sentence summary?
Yes.
I just ask you not to move this until you've looked at these questions and addressed the issues for small business in Oregon and the effect it's going to have on it.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Chairman Metzger and members of the committee, my name is Brian Butench. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Brewers Guild, and we are not opposed to Bill 2171. We are opposed to the amendments, primarily for a number of reasons. There's no limits or cap on what counties could charge. For Oregon breweries, Oregon is the largest market. A high tax could make breweries pull out of counties with the high tax. They could lose sales. And I think part of that would be as a high tax was enacted, they would lose sales if people trade down to lower cost beers. It might prevent smaller, newer brewers from entering a marketplace because of a high tax. So far, there are 5 breweries that have opened so far this year in Oregon, in cities from ranging from Eugene to Hood River. There's 5 more that are planning to open. Most of these breweries are production breweries. They're not brew pubs, which most of the breweries in the state are brew pubs. So I think that a lot of these breweries kind of build their business plans around this of having the same access to each market or each county. So once again, it's not clear where this tax, at what level, or what level counties can set, and I think that opens up a lot of questions in and of itself. In talking with brewers, they're always afraid of, I think, really big changes in how it will work out in the market. How it will work out in the marketplace and what kind of unintended consequences might happen because of large changes.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Perry.
Yep. Try to be brief. 2 main points. For the record, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Association. First of all, from a beer tax side, this is completely bothersome to our industry because it seems like, you know, you haven't been able to get something on the manufacturers and distributors, so let's go after the retailers. It's just basically, you know, we don't like the mouse, so let's start punishing the cat because maybe it'll get more effective at going after the mouse. And it's just a bad way to do public policy is saying, you know, if you want a beer tax, why are you punishing the retailer per se in this method? And the second is overall tax reform, and it was part of the chairman's question, I think, to Mr. Widmer, is you've heard me and Revenue Committee talk about statewide taxing. It's always better from a retail standpoint. What are you going to do here is you're going to create huge problems because I would say local governments have no gag reflex. They just don't. They're going to raise taxes. They're going to be all over the place. They're going to be very high. And like Mr. Gerard said, they're going to take money away from public safety today and raise the beer tax completely, and it's going to create huge disadvantages in different areas. Also, they're going after meals taxes right now. They're going to say, well, let's pass a beer tax first, do 5% on it, and then all of a sudden, now that you're collecting 5% on beer, let's go after the others. And they don't care if it's doable. You look at Grants Pass, it went down 77 to 23. They don't care. They're going to continue to push tax after tax after tax. And we support statewide tax reform. This is going to create huge problems for statewide tax reform because citizens are getting tired of all the weird taxes coming up at the local level. So when you guys come to them, they're going, we've already talked about taxes. We've had votes on taxes. We've had discussions on taxes. And this is going to take you another step backward in statewide tax reform. This is just a bad policy that's going to increase the amount of activity at the local level and create all kinds of new tax discussions that hasn't happened because at the time this passes, you will have probably 18 governments around the state immediately that will go after some tax. And it's never going to be the same. It's not going to be a logical process. It's just how much money can we get in the system. And, you know, this is a bad way to approach both a beer tax and a statewide tax reform. This moves both of them many steps backwards.
Thank you, Mr. Curry. Mr. Perry, are you aware of the proposal in the House that was unveiled in Ways and Means yesterday on increasing a state beer tax at the wholesale level, not a privilege tax, but a sales tax like this in the distribution chain? Are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar with the types of proposals. I don't know the particulars on that particular proposal.
Well, in general, then, where would your industry be on that general issue without the specifics of that proposal?
Can you, Mr. Chairman, can you tell me the level of the tax that was proposed?
I think it's what's being proposed by Representative Esquivel and Representative Butler and others is a 5 cent per 12 ounce tax.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the issue is, and I know that you may not have completely agreed with Mr. Girard's point, the issue is that there is a marketplace out there. And right now, distilled spirits is increasing. I mean, the market's increasing, and you can say the tax is higher or anything else, but just the price point, as the consumer looks at it today, they are buying more distilled spirits than they're buying beer and alcohol or beer and wine. And so what happens is if you have a price change, a very substance, you know, and we can argue over substance, what ends up happening is it does shift from more from one to the other. And so you see in the marketplace, and I would even say there's probably less distilled spirits being purchased necessarily. It's just they're going into different specific brands. So a lot of times when you have any kind of manipulation of the marketplace, it drives consumers. They're driving today for some different reason. I just think you amplify that by trying any dramatic changes, and we can argue over dramatic, but like I said, it's hard to tell the roll-up cost when you start going at the manufacturer level and then going all the way up to the retail level. So my concern is I don't want that thing high enough, which I think at the increase that it's at, that point of discussion, you can end up, as it moves its way through the process, you can manipulate the marketplace. Doubling the beer tax is a different issue. That is what I would call could potentially be in a manipulation of the marketplace, and I would have some concerns with that.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. Questions for any of our three panels? Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More of just a question, or actually not a question, a comment to Mr. Perry. We in the state have done tax policy largely through initiative, and that's why you have I think we all know that. That's why we have this proposal here mm-hmm. and proposals like this, and that's why you see a meals tax in one county and this tax in this city. And I just think it's incumbent upon to do more than come to every time we meet every couple years, come and wave the flag and say, yeah, we should do a statewide. We ought to have some statewide mm-hmm. solutions, and tax reform should be a part of it. I just think absent more vigorous and committed effort from all sectors, cities, counties, the business community, this is a preview of coming attractions, this proposal's like this, and we're going to all get to know I see one county commissioner there, we're going to get to know all of our county commissioners and mayors and city councilors really, really well, because they're going to get creative to find solutions absent a state that's running itself on initiative on tax policy. And so I guess the only 2 cents that I could throw to this panel is, more than, unless this is the arena we want to operate in, is more than coming, is the state's got to get serious about a statewide tax policy that is smart, rational, and focused, or this is our arena, is 36 different paths to where we want to be.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, can I? Yeah. Quick response. Well, and I, Senator Deckard, Chairman Metzger, I completely agree, and that's why when you look at this particular proposal, this is a complete restriction. And now what you're saying is we're taking off all the sideboards. When you talk about local tax policy, most of the discussions have come, you know, how do you put some parameters on it? And this, there's extreme parameters, and now you're just saying opening up the floodgates. And I think all of us have been in committees where, like I said, I know I'm not trying to sound flippant to say they don't have a gag reflex. They don't. This is just not something that is probably going to be, oh, maybe City of Portland will do 1 cent and Eugene will do 1 cent. They're going to go way overboard, and then you're going to end up looking at how do I restrict them. So, I mean, just to say I'm opening up the floodgates is extremely bad tax policy, because they have not proven themselves to be good actors in the tax arena. And that's the problem. So you can't just give them carte blanche, from my perspective.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ron Sanders.
I sort of liken this to how we tried at the state level to have a ban on smoking in all public or in, you know, restaurants and bars. And we could never get it out of the legislature. We just couldn't get there because we have such a strong lobby. And so individual local jurisdictions started doing this. They started, you know, having smoke-free workplaces. And finally, and they said, and the argument always was, we're going to go belly up. We're not going to be able to survive. We're going to, and what the businesses then found out, that really their business initially might have gone down, but then it came right back up. And I compare that with the beer tax. I, as you know, come from a conservative part of Multnomah County.
And when I'm knocking on doors and talking to my constituents, they are saying the two taxes that they see no problem with is a beer wine tax and a cigarette tax. And I feel that if that truly is a general consensus, that maybe since we can't pass it at the tax level, why not try to have this be implemented at the county level?
Well, Chair Metzger, Senator Moses Anderson, I think when you talk about the smoking, it has been a statewide discussion every time. And I mean, I understand there are local ordinances, but once again, I mean, that discussion, everybody was sort of treated equally. What you're doing here, which is, in my opinion, is saying I'm moving away from the manufacturer and I'm punishing the retailer. To saying the two are combined, I mean, yeah, they were a statewide discussion, but you're punishing the retailer in this. This is ultimately, you know, beer sales may not drop or whatever. People may go from county to county. They may go across state lines, but, I mean, people are still going to buy beer. What you're doing now is saying we're going to let the local governments pick and choose who gets hurt. And ultimately, I think a lot of people want the money. You've already said with this proposal, well, you can have the money. I don't care about the money anymore. I just want to punish the beer industry. So they're two separate, distinct. This moves it from a funding issue to a, tell you what, we don't care about the funding. We just want to punish somebody. It's just, this is a very unique example where you are not benefiting anything, but the retailer will be hurting. And that's why I can't understand why this proposal is in front of us, because in a beer tax, whether I like it or not, you're benefiting. But what you're saying is you don't want to benefit, but you don't care if I get hurt in the process. And I don't mean that to sound bad and directed at you necessarily, but that's the way the policy sits from a retail standpoint, is you are no longer benefiting, but you're asking me to take a huge risk. Okay. And it's just problematic for
us. Mr. Perry, we're going to go to the next group, because I've got to move with another bill before we finish today. But just as a comment, about benefiting. You know, we've tried for many, many years to, because of the nexus between alcohol and particularly the safety in our highways, to be able to meet those needs. And right now there's yet another proposal to help the state police. Our county partners are hurting because they don't have sheriffs, and they're asking, I was in Southern Oregon, pleading for more troopers so at least they can have some law enforcement. And I think what this bill gets at is, you know, that is the best way we can do for the state. But if not, we should give our counties the tools in the toolbox to protect themselves if we can't do it on a state level. I think that's what it is. So it is a benefit. It's a benefit for the counties to be able to fund their own public safety if the state can't get the job done. And hopefully that won't be the case. But I think that is the important issue, is that, you know, should we allow our partners, if we can't help them when they ask for our help, should we then restrict them from helping themselves? I think that's the real basis. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, I've got to make this quick. Mel, Julie, you asked to testify, so you may come up, and then Art Schlack. Our last three comments. I'm sorry, this is end of session time, so...
Mr. Chair, that's quite all right. I'll be quick, and I won't repeat anything that's been said. At least I'll try not to. Appreciate the committee's time today. I do want to comment that locals do have taxing authorities, maybe not with beer and wine, obviously, but, you know, my local community, certainly there was a large attempt to tax cell phone usage. It was in Corvallis, and that was defeated 70-30, and truly it was a bloodbath. And living in a neighborhood with a lot of firefighters, really did pit neighbor against neighbor. So I would comment that there is reason, there are local options for taxing. But keep in mind that this is a pretty broad taxing authority to the counties without any of the buffers that legislators have often considered when considering a sales tax. And, for example, collection of a tax, whether at the county level or at the statewide, when we've discussed sales tax, the legislature has never left the retailer unprotected. Any AOI has supported 9 of 10 sales tax measures in Oregon, and all of them have included a retail reimbursement. So we leave that up to a local county fight with whomever might be proposing the tax. And the sales tax is really not a zero-cost collection for retailers, and we have ample studies to prove that. Nationally, to comment, just to follow up on something Senator Deckert said, that nationally the trend is that what we see from the large retailer perspective is there are becoming bigger fights at the local levels, and that's diverting attention away from statewide solutions. And if you look at some of the largest national retailers, how they develop their government affairs arms, there's more people doing local affairs than doing national affairs or state affairs at the national level now. And I think that does divert attention away from the solutions that we need to come up with, which would be something like, if there was a statewide sales tax or something to that effect. So those are just some comments that came to mind listening to the testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ernest. Mr. Slack.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. I'm here to express our thanks to the chair for the Dash 2 amendments. And recognizing, I would say, the plight of counties throughout the state of Oregon with regard to what I would term as shared services, and especially the areas of public health and public safety where cuts are being made in county budgets due to the Secure Rural Schools. Even though we have 1 year extension of that program, we don't know whether it's going to be continued in the future beyond the 1 year, and counties at this point are continuing to make those cuts as we look into the future. I think the spirit of the Dash 2 amendment is well taken. Given the fact that if the state, as has been stated, if the state does not step up to the plate and address these kinds of issues, funding issues, both at the statewide level and the local level, in a comprehensive way, there is a need for, and I'll use the term local governments, to be able to have as many tools in the toolbox as possible to address the local issues that the citizens require and demand attention being given to that. That being said, Mr. Chair, the Association of Oregon Counties is currently reviewing the Dash 2 with our membership at this point, and we do not have a position, an exact position on the Dash 2 amendments at this time, but we continue to work with interested parties in this endeavor.
Thank you, Mr. Schlecht. And, I think that as we move through the process, there'll probably be another discussion on this over in the House where we can talk about some of those other issues. Thank you. Any questions for either of these two folks? Thank you very much. I'm going to close public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2171.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moss Anderson.
I move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2171.
Senator Moss Anderson has moved the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2171. I'll have a comment, but any other discussion? Colleagues, I think that some of the points that were brought up, I totally agree with. And I think that our statewide solutions are our best solutions. We have some serious issues. We got counties going bankrupt around here. And public safety is very, very seriously being impeded. And we have a duty in this legislature to solve those problems. If not, we got to make sure we can't put handcuffs on our partners. And say you don't have any tools in the toolbox. Now, there are opportunities out there now. I'm hopeful that by the end of the session, some of those will have an opportunity to be vented and have a discussion, and that will solve some of those issues. But I do recall in my time in the legislature, whether Senator Montserrat, you pointed out the Clean Air Act, where we had local jurisdictions. I remember Senator Starr and I were very, very active in the state tourism tax, that we finally got a state tax, because I think a lot of our partners got tired of all, local taxes, and realized that one blanket, everyone plays by the same rules, actually benefits everyone. And sometimes it starts this way in order to get, people at the table. It's not the best way. But I think it's incumbent on us to try and do the best we possibly can and continue that conversation. Any other comments? Okay. Yes, Senator Deckard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote no on the Dash 2s, and we'll limit my comments very briefly. Just a few thoughts. One is the beer tax that we have in the state is too low. It's 50th in the nation. We are a producer state, and that's one of the reasons that we have a low beer tax, is we're a producer state. But I would be supportive of, in the appropriate committee that has jurisdiction over revenue issues, an increase, a modest increase, not 400%, not 500%, but a modest increase, because I'm convinced it would do very little, if you did a modest statewide increase, little economic harm. Where I get very concerned is that we have many, many different solutions and a patchwork of state tax policy. I think the initiative's been harmful. I think I actually disagree with Mr. Slack. To have every tool in the toolbox at the city and county level will do great economic harm. And so I would just encourage folks that are opposed to this to try to find some solution. It is not going to generate a great deal of money, and I think that's the problem for advocates of a big beer tax increase, is you have to increase it a great, great deal to get to generate a great deal of revenue, and then it will do economic harm. I think it would hurt the Kurt Windmeers of the world and others. So that is why I'm opposed to this. I do think the closer we get to statewide solutions, and it's not in your excise tax arena because it just doesn't generate any money to do it in the excise tax arena, and it is harmful for producers on the beer or vineyard side. And that is largely, Mr. Chair, why I would be a no on the dash twos.
Thank you, Senator, and I appreciate your hard work. We've worked on these issues before in revenue when I was a member of revenue, and I'm hopeful that your committee will have an opportunity here to do just that in the next few weeks. Any other discussion? Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, I'm opposed to these kind of opportunities for local government or the state government to raise taxes, and one of the reasons why I'll be voting no on one of these local options later on. However, I do understand that you want to continue to work this issue, and I understand that you have a desire to work this issue. And in a couple of the counties that I represent, we're seeing a growing problem in the rural areas of facilities being located in rural areas, and traffic and sheriff's patrols and things are being taxed heavily because of the sale of alcohol in rural areas. And so I guess what I'm going to do is tell you that I'll vote no when it hits the floor, but I'll vote for it so you can keep the conversation going forward on after the, as you go on to the floor.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, let's take the roll on the dash A2, please.
Senator Ramona Sanderson.
Aye.
Senator Deckard.
No.
Senator George.
Aye.
Senator Starr.
No.
Chair Metzger.
Aye. Okay, the dash 2 amendment has been adopted.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Monis Anderson,
2171 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monis Anderson has moved Senate House Bill 2171 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Okay, please take the roll.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Deckard?
No.
Senator Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Chair Metzger?
Votes aye. House Bill 2171 is amended. Go floor with a due pass recommendation. The chair will carry.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Served notice of a possible minority report.
Senator Starr has served notice of a possible minority report, and we'll look forward to that. Thank you, committee, very, very much. Okay. We'll let the people in the room know. We're coming back at 5 o'clock. This is what I want to do. I have Commissioner Lewis here for a bill. I'm going to ask for her testimony. We'll close that public hearing, and then we're going to go to 2269 vehicle registration plates, and that will take us till 3 o'clock, and then we will adjourn till 5. So if you have business after that, we'll do those bills at that time. Okay? Sorry about that. We've got a huge schedule, and we're trying to get to everybody here. So... see, which bill are you on, Commissioner? Oh, I see. Let's open up House Bill 3082. And Janet, can you give us a brief summary of 3082 as Commissioner Lewis comes forward?
I already have the summary. This is the bill that would remove the requirement for a vote of the people for a local ordinance on county vehicle registration fees.
Right. Thank you. Commissioner, welcome, and thank you for your patience.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Leslie Lewis. I'm a county commissioner in Yamhill County, and I'm here today to ask you folks to support House Bill 3082. And I'm not going to use the tool in the toolbox because that's been used a lot already today. But counties are facing a very serious problem with the loss of the timber revenue that has helped many of us support our local roads. And in my county, I can just give you an example. We're not as badly hurt as other counties because we didn't ever have very much timber revenue. But having said that, it is about 10% of our budget. It's a loss of $500,000 annually. And for my county, that was the dollars that we used to do a lot of our resurfacing projects on our county roads. And we've tried very hard. Over the last 5 or 6 years, we have 380 miles of paved roads in Yanhill County, and we've tried to have a program to resurface 10% of those paved miles every year on the theory that we're giving them a 10 years of new life so that if we could get clear around the system, we would be able to basically keep the system, the paved road system, maintained. I also have 240 miles of gravel roads. People who live on those would love to see them paved. I have no budget, no way to pave those, but I'd at least like to maintain the investment that I have in the paved system. Because of the loss of the federal timber dollars, even though it looks like 1 year has been restored, we have had to this year budget with the assumption we weren't getting the timber money, and we've cut that paving project back from 38 miles to about 12 miles this year. We have no sure future that the timber revenues will be restored, and we will have to look at other options. As you both, all of you know, the gas tax has not been increased for many years. We have had modest increases in various other kinds of fees, which has provided a small amount of money to Yanhill County, but it's in the neighborhood of $250,000. Not unwelcome. We're glad we had that. But again, I think that I appreciate the discussion that things ought to be done at a broader statewide level and those kinds of solutions arrived at. But because they haven't been, I think that's why the counties are here today asking for a local option. And that is my testimony, Mr. Chair, and I would take any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Lewis. Questions for Commissioner Lewis? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Oh, by the way, would you care to comment on the local option that we just passed?
Mr. Chair, I think I understand your desire to move that bill forward, and while I wouldn't see myself voting for a local sales tax, I believe I understand where you're going with that, and I agree that there needs to be the broader discussion, and we have many needs in the public safety arena statewide as well as in the transportation arena, and I'm hopeful that perhaps your efforts will cause a broader discussion to take place. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Okay, let's close the public hearing on House Bill 3082. Let's open up the public hearing on House Bill 2269. This will be our final bill before our break at 3 o'clock. Janet.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2269 is at the request of the Department of Transportation, and it sets the fees for the registration plates for the manufacturing fee. It rounds up from to the next highest half dollar for the manufacturing fee for plates, and adds a dollar for a single plate and $2 for each pair of plates, with those monies being going to 60% to counties and 40% to cities for that extra dollar. This fee is only for when you have a new car or new plates for a used car, or if you need replacement plates for some reason. You have also the 2269-1 amendment, which would add another $10 per plate and authorize highway user tax funds with a limit of $200 million and a maturity of not more than 20 years. Bonds proceeds would be able to be used for projects selected by the Oregon Transportation Commission.
Thank you, Janet. And as Mr. Jack Evans, Art Schleich, and Bob Russell come forward, just a comment to the committee, and I know, and I want to really thank Senator Starr, who helped in drafting some of the language for the Dash One Amendment. As you know, we've had this discussion about transportation funding, and unfortunately, it doesn't look like we're doing anything substantial in terms of funding this year. But I think we've got a very good framework to do what we need to do that this committee has is working on and will strive on to continue as we move towards to the next session. This is a beginning. We are limited, as you know, under the Constitution. This is a fee-raising bill. It raises it to a dollar. We're not able to raise this any further within cost responsibility, which we have in the House. So I think it's time that we send this bill over with what we can get and continue doing the modest investments as we set a stage for hopefully doing major improvements in our transportation system. So that's the purpose of the bill, and I'll begin by asking Mr. Evans from ODOT to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Jack Evans of the Department of Transportation, and I'm going to talk to the core bill 2269, and Doug Tindall will talk to the Dash One amendments for ODOT. Basically, this is a pre-session filed bill that allows ODOT to, in rule, raise the fee for license plates to cover the cost, the manufacturing cost for those plates, and to keep the cities and counties whole. At this time, in statute, we're allowed to charge $5 per pair of plates for a license plate, and that covers our costs as well as allows us to send $2 of those funds to cities and counties for their road work, and we send about $1 million a year, and as Janet pointed out, that's split 60-40 county and city. What we want to do is to address the possibility and the probability of increase in manufacturing costs driven largely by the metals industry. With the price of aluminum going up, we're anticipating having these costs that we'll need to address. We want to be able to cover our costs and to still be able to send the $2 to the cities and counties. Hence, we're asking for that authority in statute.
Thank you very much. I think we'll go through our, and then we'll get to Doug in a moment. Mr. Slack. Please comment on either the underlying bill or the entire bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. First, Mr. Chair, with regard to the underlying bill, we support the underlying bill. It is intended to keep cities and counties whole. And I would just note that the $1 and $2 amount that goes to cities and counties is in current statute, so they're not changing that. It's just allowing ODOT to realize the increase in labor and also the increase in material costs, and keep that $1 and $2 still going to cities and counties as part of our transportation revenue at this point. Mr. Chair, with regard to the Dash One amendments, we would support those. We view this as, I would say, a first step in terms of a more comprehensive package dealing with transportation issues and needs, and that the development of that package will hopefully start this session and then go on to 2008 and hopefully culminate in 2009. I would indicate that we with AOC continue to believe that there is a need for a multi-session strategy dealing with transportation revenue. We would view, again, this is a first step in that. And I see Senator Starr shaking his head yes. And I know Senator Metzger has shaked his head yes with regard to that. With regard to the amendments, we would hope that local facilities could be considered as part of those projects that would reduce congestion on state highways and others. So this is not, at least in our view when we read this, the Dash One amendments, not just limited to state highways, that it might be projects on county roads or city streets where it would meet the criteria that's laid forth for the OTC to review. I just want to put that on the record, Mr. Chair. That being said, Mr. Chairman, we support the Dash 1 amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Schleck. Mr. Russell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I'll be very brief. I wanted to indicate my support for the Dash 1 amendments, and also I wanted to make the commitment to the committee that we believe this is the first step in a multi-session strategy to adequately fund our highways, roads, and streets. I want to thank the chair and the vice chair for their continuing hard work. I would also ask the chair to continue to encourage Ways and Means to move the companion measure, Senate Bill 566, and I would like to cede the rest of my time to Craig Campbell from AAA. Yeah.
Let's ask Mr. Campbell and Mr. Tindall to come forward. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here representing AAA Oregon. I wanted to testify in support of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2269. This is a good first step. Obviously, it also has the side benefit of rectifying the slight imbalance that the last cost responsibility study identified, where heavy vehicles were overpaying their share in comparison to cars, and this will even that out, which we're very pleased by. Also, it seems like this is a by including the language for the Congestion Relief Act, it's nice that this is in a single package, and it does need to be reiterated that we also plan on being active participants beyond this session and working toward a multiple session solution to our transportation funding issue. And I certainly answer any questions, but we're very pleased by this and support it fully.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Mr. Tindall.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, good afternoon. Doug Tindall, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Transportation. We've had a chance to look at the Dash 1 amendments. The Dash 1 amendments raise about $9.7 million a year. At a 20-year bond, that would allow for the sales of $125 million in bonds to address the critical transportation needs in this state. I think you've heard multiple presentations about those needs and are aware of those needs, and we too would like to join in thanking the chair and the vice chair for your leadership in moving something forward to try and deal with those great transportation needs that Oregonians face and need so desperately to keep the economy moving. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Tindall. And as the members know, we have a Bill 3018 in the House, which has this with enough to do a $200 million deal, and we're still hopeful that that might come through. On the flip side, is because of the weight mile adjustment, that bill would start in January 2010, because this one doesn't change the cost responsibility, because truckers are currently out of balance to the detriment of truckers to the cars. The advantage is at least this 125 will start right away in January, so we can get on it and get some projects going as we move through our multiple session strategy, and hopefully at the end of the day it wouldn't make much difference if we can start getting these projects going. So thank you. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either to you or to Mr. Tindall, I just want to make sure I understand Section 3. There is in subsection 2, it says 10% shall be secured for the right-of-way projects for statewide significance. And if the OTC decided that some project of statewide significance deserved more than that percentage, I don't see anything in that that would preclude them from putting more dollars in there.
Go to one project.
To go to secure right-of-way for projects. That's just a minimum of that much. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. That was a good suggestion. Right-of-way is very expensive, and so we want to provide some opportunity for that in this bill. Okay, that's all I have set to testify. Anybody else would like to make a comment on this bill before we move forward? And jumping forward is the cities of the state of Oregon, modified by Linda Ludwig. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. You've heard from cities about our significant transportation funding needs. We just want to thank you for the work with this bill. We support the Dash 1 amendments. And thank you also very much for maintaining the small license plea fee fix. Can't say it fast three times. Mm-hmm. In the bill. It's a small funding stream, but we appreciate you maintaining that in the amendment. So we support this and ask that you will as well.
Thank you, Ms. Ludwig. Questions? Okay. That's all. Then we'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2269.
Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2269.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2269. Discussion. No objection. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2269 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2269 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
You know, there's been a lot of conversation, and it seems to be ongoing that this legislature is not doing anything as it relates to funding transportation. And I'd just like to refute that. I think that under this bill, and if House Bill 3018 would get some legs, I think there's support generally from the taxpaying, major taxpayers, major stakeholders on that bill. We could do more than $125 million. We could do $200 million. But the most important thing is that we have commitments to move forward aggressively. And with the bill that's stuck in Ways and Means, I think we have the vehicle with which to do that. And I'm very excited. I'm optimistic. You know, we've been at this for almost 5 months now. We've got a transportation package that's moving through this legislature, and I just wish that folks would understand that that's happening, and rather than keep kind of saying that nothing's happening. Something is happening, and I think it's a good thing. So appreciate your leadership moving this bill forward.
Thank you, Senator. And again, just to reiterate for all those who are watching, is that this committee, and I do believe at the end of the day, this legislature and the legislature that will follow us, is committed to transportation. We know the gap is huge. We know it's widening. You know, we've talked in other bills today about local revenues and tools, and that's part of the mix when you get to transportation as well as statewide help. And we need to have this conversation with Oregonians so that they clearly understand the magnitude of the need and what it takes to fix it. And I think they will respond as they did under Senator Starr's leadership on the OTIA packages. You know, this is produces $125 million. And I will just remind those out there who are going gaga over Connect Oregon 2 for $100 million that this is even this piece is more than the whole Connect Oregon piece, which has received a lot of ink. And there are a lot of projects that Mr. Tindall has provided us that cities and counties and working with their projects to the Transportation Commission that do some significant relief in various parts of the state that are not all the $600 million projects. They're one, they're two, they're five, they're $8 million projects that make a difference, that this bill will make a difference. But most importantly, it just starts us on that path again, that we're not going to leave transportation. We're going to continue working on it. We have some major things we need to do. It's going to take a lot of heavy lifting. That heavy lifting is going to begin with this committee immediately upon sine die. Well, a little vacation. But then and working towards February and then again next January to address those needs. So we're looking forward to continuing this conversation. This is a beginning. We have the motion on 422-69. Is there any objection to the well, I guess you have to move the bill.
He did.
I did move. Oh, Senator Starr did move the bill. Okay. Any objection to the motion to move the bill? It's a goofy afternoon. Okay. No objection. So ordered. And I think I'm going to ask Senator Starr and I to co-carry this so we can talk about the other elements involved in this bill. Colleagues, thanks so much for all your help today. These are always tough, these end of session meetings. We are going to reconvene at 5 o'clock in hearing room C now.
It's been moved to C. We're recessing until 5.
So, yes. So we will recess until 5 o'clock, hearing room C. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
Yeah, good job.